The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Community's column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but how can the Bible be the word of God if the Bible contradicts itself? I mean, is God schizophrenic or something? A very good question you're asking, and I think you'll find the answers very interesting as well. I am going to examine some standard Bible objections, you know, the kind of stuff you find on those atheist websites. So tune in, my atheist friends, and I do have many, many atheist friends. Atheists and I get along just fine. We don't always agree. Well, we never agree, but we get along just fine. And my agnostic friends, don't want to leave you out, or just Christians looking for better answers to give their friends. First, the latest news, and what news it was. About a week ago, speaking on the House floor, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, the Democrat from Texas, offered a somewhat predictable but less than original theory as to why Congress is making President Obama's job difficult regarding the debt ceiling expansion. Her hint that it might be racism seems about as subtle and restrained as a sand-filled paper dam over Niagara Falls.
I am particularly sensitive to the fact that only this president, only this one, has received the kind of attacks and disagreements and inability to work. Only this one. Read between the lines. What is different about this president that should put him in a position that he should not receive the same kind of respectful treatment of when it is necessary to raise the debt limit in order to pay our bills, something required by both statute and the 14th Amendment? Why isn't it addressed in the manner? It's all right to disagree or agree on the balanced budget amendment. It's all right to talk about how we're going to appropriate. In fact, in this House, the Republicans are getting their way, gutting and cutting everything that we can find. It's all right to have that disagreement. That is the give and take of democracy. When you win, you're the majority. And if we can't find a way to agree together, then the majority wins. I understand that. But I do not understand what I think is the maligning and maliciousness of this president. Why is he different? And in my community, that is the question that we raise. In the minority community, that is the question that is being raised. Why is this president being treated so disrespectfully? Why has the debt limit been raised 60 times? Why does the leader of the Senate continually talk about his job is to bring the president down to make sure he's unelected? It's 2011. It's not 2012. You need to play those politics in 2012, not now.
Okay, now, before we label her comment as thoughtless and irresponsible, we'll be fair enough to agree that technically, Sheila Jackson Lee was not talking about general criticism of presidents, but rather a very specific financial issue. Okay. We also acknowledge her disclaimers in the same speech about rights of political parties to disagree with each other. Notice how she gave that disclaimer about how they have the rights to disagree with each other, and then she talked about how they really don't have the right to disagree, really. Because since Ms. Jackson also put forth a challenge about reading between the lines, it's difficult to ignore some crystal clear lines of her own with little, if anything, in between. One must literally suspend belief to suggest her insinuations of racism do not apply to any criticism of Obama, financial or otherwise. As a matter of fact, what we heard Friday serves as a fair sequel to Sweet Sheila's other thoughtful remarks, such as those 2010 verbal gymnastics delivered before the NAACP. Do you remember that? And I'm quoting her now. She said, and I'm this quote comes with everything, the ahs, the oohs, the applauses. So she says, and I thank you, Professor, very much. I'm going to be engaging you with those very powerful numbers that you have offered on what the Tea Party recognizes or is recognized as, might I add my own PS, all those who wore sheets a long time ago have now lifted them off and started wearing it. At this point, she gets applause. Clothing with a name, say, I am part of the Tea Party. Don't you be fooled. And then voices say, that's right. And then there's more applause. Those who used to wear sheets are now being able to walk down the aisle and speak as a patriot, because you will not speak loudly about the lack of integrity in this movement. Now, later on, she tried to walk that comment back a little by insisting she was talking only about elements of the Tea Party. Just elements. Okay, Congresswoman, since we're talking only about elements, how do you feel about those elements of the Tea Party that are made up of Democrats? How do you feel, Congresswoman, about those elements of the Tea Party that are made up of independents? How about the African Americans who attend Tea Parties? Don't tell me they don't. I've been to Tea Parties. How about the Black Tea Party movement, big movement? For that matter, what do you say to African Americans who chose not to vote for Obama in 2008? Do you think every African American voted for him? Did you assume that every African American would vote for him just because he's African American? That would be a racist assumption right there. But there were a lot of African Americans that did not vote for Obama in 2008. Ms. Lee, were they racist? How about white Americans who did vote for Obama but promised they will not do so a second time? Oh, I suppose they overcame their racism in 2008, but will be victims of a relapse should they fail to offer a repeat performance. And let us not forget the many conservatives who defended Clarence Thomas and Condoleezza Rice from attacks from liberals. How do you label conservative and liberal responses in those cases, Ms. Lee? In fact, Congresswoman, do you or any of your political peers truly believe for a second that the high majority of Republicans and other conservatives, both in and out of the Tea Party, would not vote for an African-American presidential candidate who had a platform of lesser government, lower taxes, pro-life affirmations, school vouchers, etc.? In your mind, Congresswoman, is it even remotely possible that objections of House and Senate Republicans to Obama's economic solutions have anything to do with 2010 voters who put their representatives in power to stop a president who has totaled our economy? And when I say totaled our economy, I don't mean the way a mathematician totals numbers, but rather the way an automobile gets totaled. Oh, wait. Almost forgot. Obama inherited this mess from our horrible former president. Yes, indeed. The only hand played as frequently as the race card is an eight of clubs blame Bush card. As a matter of fact, since Obama can't seem to get over good old George W., a useful example in our discussion might just be standing before our very eyes. And Ms. Lee, you say Obama alone, him alone, has received the kind of attacks and disagreements an inability to work. Only this one. Yes, you must be right. That certainly rings true. After all, when Obama was a senator, he and his fellow Democrats supported George Bush at every turn, as you yourself did, Ms. Lee. Liberal circles outside of Washington got behind President Bush as well. No journalists or bloggers or college professors ever compared the man to Hitler, or accused him of fabricating a 9/11 hoax, or suggested he deliberately delayed the rescuing of African Americans during Hurricane Katrina. And if anybody had said those things, Sheila, you would have rushed to his defense, right? Remember all the commentary back in 2008 after Pastor Rick Warren interviewed both presidential candidates, John McCain and Barack Obama? Those who favored McCain pointed out how direct his answers were when Warren threw out questions such as, does evil exist? Those siding with Obama talked about McCain as if he gave overly simplistic answers. They enjoyed pointing out how ultimate issues of life are often more complex than a childish mind can fathom. They liked the subtle nuances of Obama's response, such as the badge of a genuine intellectual. In fact, for a while, the word nuance became quite the popular election year catchphrase. What happened? Whatever happened to the notion that issues are sometimes more complicated and nuanced? Is Congresswoman Lee providing an example of liberal intellectualism? The only quarrel one can possibly have with Obama is his skin color? It couldn't have anything to do with his deadly economic policies, not to mention a litany of other issues? Should Western civilization survive, I doubt that our generation will be remembered for its deep, rational thought. If, despite this lunatic time in American history, pockets of wisdom remain unscorched for posterity, it is unlikely that they will ever appear on the same pages as the historical record of Representative Sheila Jackson Lee's recent comments on the House floor. Now, none of this suggests that the woman has not done a good job with other things in her career. It's just that this isn't her towering moment. By the way, for those of you who are still incapable of thinking beyond race, just to show you that Congresswoman Lee's ethnicity has nothing to do with my observation, I don't expect to see favorable marks in future history books for Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid either. With this understatement of the century, let's long together for a wiser time, a more innocent time.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. He once was a true love of mine.
Thank you.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Almost didn't get in to do the show today. My girlfriend Dana and I were trapped in an elevator for an hour right here in the studio. It's always romantic to be trapped with your girlfriend in an elevator, but we did have on our mind the fact that the show was supposed to stop at 6, and I think it was maybe 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes before. Was it 5 minutes, Paul, before we got in here? Something like that. Anyway, I'm happy to be with you. When you have your cell phone with you, it never hurts to call a few friends and have them pray. So those of you who prayed, I'm sure you're listening right now. Your prayers worked. And a curse on your household for possibly not planning to listen to the show if I hadn't called you with that SOS. If you're listening now only because I called you, curses on you, but thanks for praying. Anyway, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, call in toll-free number 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. These days, many people contact us through Facebook, Twitter. We get into all the latest things here. We slice, we dice. Some people contact me directly through my website. That's bobsiegel.net. questions@bobsiegel.net, that is. Bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. This is from John, and he's talking about what I just talked about, Sheila Jackson Lee, claiming that those Republicans in the House, and she probably meant those in the Senate too, who are objecting Obama's financial staffs on this raising of the ceiling are doing it because of racism. And John says, I wonder if any people who happened to be black who participated in throwing eggs at Bush's second inauguration motorcade would be considered racist. Not by MSNBC or the New York Times, John, but perhaps by some. Certainly not by Sheila Jackson Lee. This is from EJB. EJB. Who describes himself as a very white baby boomer. He says Sheila Jackson is talking about an attitude displayed toward the president that has nothing to do with his policies. The author may be tired. The author is me, because he's talking about my Washington Times Communities version of this on my column Forbidden Table Talk. So the author, Bob Siegel, may be tired, quote unquote, of folks pointing out racism, but his attack of the messenger with suggestions of hypocrisy is an unfair and very tired tactic. We need to have more discussion of racism, not less. It is very much alive in America, and because I am aware of it does not make me someone who is incapable of thinking beyond race. EJB, how you doing today? You hanging in there? You having a good day? My friend, the discussion we need to have is about real racism. Yes, we do need to have that discussion. Real racism. Not people who cry wolf and make false accusations of racism simply because the policies of our current president are questioned. This next guy calls himself Marathon Man, and he wrote a marathon of a response. He's a little nicer about it. He disagrees with me too, but in a more respectful tone. He says, I'm not sure I understand the author's points here. Are you saying none of the attacks on the Obama administration have been fueled by racism? Or are you saying that Representative Jackson is a hypocrite for suggesting such a thing? I'm confused, because you qualify the context of all of Representative Jackson's statements after the fact, but still proceed to make very generalized arguments about them anyway. I've no idea what you've experienced personally in your life in terms of racism, so I won't make any assumptions there. What I will say is racism is still very much alive in America, and very much so in American politics. Representative Lee may have been somewhat heavy-handed in her remarks. Oh, you think? Anyway, she may have been somewhat heavy-handed in her remarks, but she was still very astute in her observations. Astute in her observations. This staggers the imagination, but I'll continue reading anyway. Our friend Marathon Man goes on to say, racism is no longer an in-your-face game. In its present incarnation within the American political landscape, it is far more subtle and insidious. To believe that none of the criticism of President Obama has its beginnings in racial bigotry is naive. Only 60 years ago, it was illegal to be an American of African descent in certain parts of this country. Sarcasm, spare me. Now, by some miracle, we have a president whom it is often overlooked is just as white as he is black. Not all Americans of European descent are racist, but historically here, they have been the oppressor, with various ethnic groups, Native Americans, Japanese Americans, etc., serving as the oppressed. Well, you know, I didn't agree with the intern camps of the Japanese, but there was this little thing called Pearl Harbor, so that didn't exactly happen in a vacuum. But anyway, I'll move on. For a member of a particularly oppressed ethnic group to believe that criticisms of this president are at least somewhat racially motivated is not that far off base. Okay, well, Marathon Man, first of all, thank you for your comment. Since you asked what I've experienced personally in terms of racism, I'm going to tell you, I am Jewish. My own people have been victims of the Klan, victims of pogroms, victims of the Holocaust. We also get to hear the more subtle comments, Jews are stingy, or all Jews are rich, or Jews have big noses. So yes, I have experienced racism firsthand, and yes, it would be naive to assume racism does not exist anymore. But my friend, it's also naive to assume that one who questions President Obama's policies has a racist motive. You are not a mind reader. Neither am I. I realize you're not making assumptions, but rather suggesting that it is fair to be suspicious of racism in the case of Obama opposition. But we must be able to treat all people in a fair way, which, according to the traditions of any civilized country, means that a man is innocent until proven guilty. What happened to that idea? If Obama's policies are being challenged, the only appropriate response is to agree with the challenge or defend Obama's policy, but defend it with facts, defend it with logic. It adds zero nourishment to any important national discussion when we presume to know motive or when we articulate a suspicion of motive. If an actual racist expresses his racism, then we talk about race. Then we confront him. Otherwise, we run the risk of false accusation, something I'm sure you would not wish to do. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Our program. I'm reading a lot of responses to what I had to say about Sheila Jackson Lee, both on the air and in the Washington Times communities, literary online version. And this fellow calls himself Marathon Man. He was being respectful, but he's making the case that racism is sometimes subtle. And so even if we don't have overt evidence of racism against Obama, racism exists in a subtle form. But you see the quicksand we get into with that? It becomes like a conspiracy theory. We're claiming it's subtle, so the less you see racism, well, the more subtle it is. Then he's challenging some of the things I had said about Miss Lee. I claimed that she gave some disclaimers. I acknowledged some of the disclaimers she gave to give some context, but still challenged her. And he said, well, that doesn't make any sense because he acknowledged her disclaimers, but then he still challenged her. Well, you see, I did that for a reason. In journalism, you want to be fair. If someone gave a disclaimer, you don't want to pretend they didn't. But on the other hand, speaking about being naive, let's not be so naive as to think that politicians don't sometimes give disclaimers and then just completely contradict what their disclaimer said, which is what she did. So Marathon Man, as we're being fair to Miss Lee about the context of her remarks, yes, it is always important to acknowledge context, which is why I did so. But she is still responsible for her actual words after she spoke the disclaimer. And those words on the House floor, along with her words about the Tea Party, which had no disclaimers until she tried to walk it back on the Ed show a couple days later, that demonstrates a willingness to play the race card far too easily. Now, I sympathize with the fact that Sheila Jackson Lee has her own experiences with racism and that they may contribute toward her skepticism. But she is a United States Congresswoman who should be about uniting and not dividing. I myself did not assume that Republicans hated Jews simply because they did not vote for the 2000 ticket with a fellow Jew as the VP candidate. Remember, it was Gore and Lieberman. Lieberman was Jewish. I'm Jewish. But I would not have voted for Lieberman even if he'd been at the top of the ticket. Even if it had been flipped and he'd have been at the top candidate. If he was offering himself as our country's first Jewish president, I, as a Jew, would not have voted for him. You know why? Because I disagreed strongly with his policies. Isn't that supposed to be what it's all about? The policies? Now, I did meet people who thought I might vote for Gore Lieberman simply because I was Jewish. They said, hey, you going to vote for Gore because he has a Jew as his running mate? I said, I wouldn't vote for Gore if he had Jesus Christ as his running mate. Ironically, those kinds of assumptions that just because I'm a Jew, I'm going to vote for a Jew, aren't those examples of true racism? Those of you who wrote in and said we need a discussion, we need to continue and have more discussion about race. Okay, well, let's look at all the racism, even the harmless but frustrating ignorance. Saying, well, you're a Jew, he's a Jew, so surely you're going to vote for him. It doesn't work that way if we choose to use our brains, my friend. And it would be a stretch to call me, Bob the Jew, an anti-Semite for not supporting Lieberman. With that in mind, I made several observations in my article and over the air about African Americans who did not and still will not vote for Obama. My friend, I'm sure you would agree that their reasons must be related to policy and not race. Why then are we not giving this same benefit of the doubt to white people who voted against Obama? Overemphasizing race and looking for racism, even when it is not immediately apparent, runs the risk of tearing people apart rather than bringing them together. In any event, I appreciate the time you took to read my column. You're welcome to comment again anytime, my friend. Now, as I said, this man disagreed, but with respect. So I responded with respect. As you know, my responses are not in the category of one size fits all. For example, listen to the accusatory tone of this next fellow. He calls himself Concerned. Concerned says, though he starts by quoting Sheila Jackson Lee, and then he continues by agreeing with her. Quote, those who used to wear sheets are now being able to walk down the aisle and speak as a patriot, because you will not speak loudly about the lack of integrity in this movement. That's a quotation of what Sheila Jackson Lee had to say about the Tea Party movement. And then Concerned adds this, and he directs it at me. That's the problem I have with your movement. You used to wear a sheet. Now you say you are a patriot? don't fool yourself because you have a new sheet to wear. It sounds like racism is still a big part of your life game. That was from Concerned. Are you concerned, buddy? Are you? Are we getting concerned? Well, guess what? Now I'm concerned. People like you make me concerned about the country we live in. Concerned? Am I to understand that you are quoting and then expounding upon the Congresswoman's thoughtless, irresponsible, inflammatory comment because you, too, believe the Tea Party movement is just another version of the Klan? Is that what you're saying here? And since the word you was offered, are you attempting to state that I, too, have Klan sentiments simply because I defended the Tea Party movement? Did you actually read the column, or were you merely reacting emotionally? Rather than responding to even one of the questions I put forth, some regarding African-American Tea Party participants, you instead proved my point by offering a comment so void of logic that it literally short-circuits any meaningful dialogue. Let me tell you something. I don't mind repeating it. I am Jewish, and my own people have been victims of the Klan. And frankly, I need no lectures from one who quickly opens his mouth without first rebooting the hard drive on his brain. Now, to my audience, sorry. I'm sorry, folks. I told you my responses are not one size fits all. Sometimes I think there's a place for outrage. His comment, in the name of racism, was guilty of the kind of bigotry and prejudice he's lecturing us about, and I won't stand for it. And you shouldn't either. Never, ever let a person like that get away with a comment like that. Meanwhile, it gets even better. The revelation that I am Jewish put out over Washington Times communities then takes on a life of its own because people have thoughts about the Jews too. All kinds of people. When you mention the Jews, oh, that brings up a whole different discussion about racism. Yeah, usually when people talk about the Jews, it's very reasoned with well-authenticated thoughts, right? Yeah, in response to my statement that Jews have been victims of racism, Tom writes, and now we all tend to be victims of the Jews. Tom, what exactly does that mean? Oh, please elaborate on your statement with some actual examples. Is this anti-Semitic disinformation drivel about how Jews run the world? Or is this instead the other mistaken belief that all Jews are liberal, with liberal ideas helping to create a nation of people who falsely view themselves as victims? I'm neither a rich Jew, neither am I a liberal Jew, just your regular run-of-the-mill Jew who converted to Christianity. Anyway, Cindy on Facebook says she likes what I had to say. Well, thank you, Cindy. Sooner or later, figured somebody had to like it. Maureen on Facebook says about Sheila Jackson Lee, she's got nothing else, just like Obama blaming W almost 3 years later. Well, we'll look at more of your comments about that very uncontroversial monologue I gave about Sheila Jackson Lee, and then we'll move into our discussion this week about the Bible. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Some more comments on Facebook regarding what we've been talking about today. Sheila Jackson Lee's comments on the House of Representatives floor, saying that those who are opposing Obama are doing it for race reasons. Russ on Facebook says, if I don't support President Obama but do support Herman Cain, am I a racist? Excellent question, Russ. Russ continues, if Herman Cain or Representative Alan West oppose President Obama's policies, are they racist? Why does Obama now define himself as black if he had one white parent? Isn't that racist? Well, I'm not sure about that last part. I guess he can identify himself any way he wants. But yeah, boy, I'd love to see Herman Cain get the nominations just to watch people dance around. Well, Herman Cain, you know, he's not really black. I mean, he's the house Negro. That's the way they would say it. And anyway, that's the way they would say it, not the way I would say it. George on Facebook says, Sheila is trapped in a progressive political party where bigotry has been the name of the game from its very beginning. She fits in for two reasons. First, she is a bigot in her own right. Secondly, the progressives made it policy way back at the beginning of the last century that they needed to bring people on board who could lend legitimacy to their work and keep the less desirable at bay. The big difference now is most of us find that kind of belief despicable and will fight against it. Back then, the elite pushed their ideas against little resistance. And then Deb on Facebook, reading all these comments, says, touche, all of you, well, excepting Sheila Jackson Lee. Thank you. Patty on Facebook says, thanks, Bob, and I liked your response to Marathon Man, but you are the true Marathon Man, writing all these wonderful articles. Well, that's very nice of you to say that, Patty. Theodore on Facebook says, now here's another person who's taking issue with me, but doing it in a very respectful way. These are my favorite comments, folks, because I'm of the opinion that we can disagree with each other without all the accusations. And here's what Theodore says. He says, being from Houston, I can definitely say that Sheila Jackson Lee is an idiot. However, given that she speaks for her constituency, there is a group of people in this country who feel extremely left out and excluded. Everything that happens is filtered through that perspective. All they can see is that blacks are incarcerated at a rate of 6-1 to whites. Blacks have net household wealth of about 1-10 to 1-20th that of whites. Poverty rates are 3 times higher, and so on. All I'm saying is I can understand why they would react that way. Well, Theodore, I can understand the point you're making, and I do sympathize. I believe there are other factors that contribute to poverty and crime besides racism. And even if that were not true, it would have absolutely nothing to do with people who object to Obama's policies. And although I do not ascribe to the notion that our country needed to prove it was not racist by voting for Obama, the truth is, our country did elect an African-American president. Wouldn't that speak to the issue that the color of a person's skin is less and less of an issue in this country? And when people say we need to still have a discussion about race, even after we've elected a black president, that makes me wonder if this is ever going to stop. If there's ever a time when we'll say, okay, yes, racism is a horrible part of our past, and yes, some races still exist in some places, but as a nation in general, we've elected a black president, let's move on. Let's move on and realize that we're at least not as racist as we used to be, but people aren't moving on. Also, Theodore, my friend, disproportionate arrests have to do with disproportionate crime. I'm sorry to say it that way. Juries must still evaluate a case based upon the evidence. I remember hearing some civil rights activists back during the time of the OJ trial saying that even if a jury thinks a black man is guilty, they should still let him off so that there can be a kind of affirmative action in our prison and death penalty system. Well, I don't need to tell you our nation cannot survive with that kind of thinking. As for pay scales, we do have laws in place forbidding discriminations of blacks or discriminations of anybody. Successful African Americans and unsuccessful African Americans should be studied side by side. I believe if we did so, we'd see other factors in play besides racism. But I'm glad to hear from you, Theodore. Please write again, my friend. Well, last week I responded, this is switching to another subject, I responded to a letter from Grace, a self-professed atheist, who said that, here's another accusation, she said that because I disagree with the lifestyle of gays, that means I hate gays. Clearly. Automatically, surely. Well, I pointed out that Grace, being a self-professed atheist, obviously disagrees with the lifestyle of Christians. And I threw out the challenge whether that meant she hated all Christians or whether she herself was tolerant of another's lifestyle. Well, Grace has since answered me. She says, I get your drift. And yes, I have absolutely no tolerance for Christians. None. Nada. Not one bit. Well, Grace, first of all, thank you for admitting it. Some people would not admit that. I mean that sincerely. Thank you for admitting it. But now, Grace, since you have admitted your own intolerance, I hope you'll stop lecturing Christians when they don't tolerate the same things you do. Nobody tolerates everything. Who are we kidding? We just heard from a lot of people that don't tolerate racism. We shouldn't tolerate racism. Nobody tolerates everything. Since I'm an atheist, Grace says, she continues here, she says, since I'm an atheist, I get to choose all religions as a myth. That's an interesting point. Atheists are always claiming to have the high intellectual ground. Now follow this logic. Since I'm an atheist, I get to choose all religions as a myth. Well, Grace, you can choose to believe whatever you want, but making that choice without evidence would mean that you have the same blind faith that you accuse Christians of having, wouldn't it? Grace continues, but as you probably know, studies show that atheists are more knowledgeable of the Bible than most Christians. I hate to say this, but she's partly right about that. Grace, I would say it this way. Some atheists are more knowledgeable of the Bible than some Christians, perhaps many Christians. That is true. But what that means is that many Christians are unprepared for the barrage of alleged Bible contradictions introduced by atheist teachers or atheist websites. At the same time, Grace, atheists taking such alleged contradiction Bible verses out of context display their own ignorance when you compare them to any Christian who's actually studied the Bible. So what I'm saying, Grace, is an atheist compared to a Christian who hasn't studied the Bible wins against the Christian hands down. To a Christian who's studied the Bible and they hear some of the things atheists say, it doesn't come down that way. Grace continues. She says, in fact, I think the quickest way to make someone an atheist is to give them a Bible. Worked for me as a Baptist child. Well, Grace, you were raised a Baptist. I was raised as a Jewish atheist and later became an ordained Baptist. What do you think about that, switcheroo? So I guess we've traded places. But Grace, I'll back up my position with facts, not with ad hominem attacks. Now, Grace, I'm not saying you don't have any facts. I'm just saying that we haven't heard even one of them yet. So, Grace, I'll tell you what. Since you know the Bible better than most Christians, a debate with a Christian will be a cakewalk for you. You are welcome to come on my radio show to debate me. You can call in by phone. We'll even set up a moderator to give you equal time. What do you say? Let's see how well-founded your smug arrogance is. Grace continues, but we'll read more of her comments when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
welcome back to our program. I was reading some comments from Grace. I had read some last week and responded, and she's since responded to my response. And she's just ripping into Christianity. She says, it's fun to see Bible scholars pick and choose which verse and chapter of dusty, dry fable to purport being the word of God. Well, Grace, you're making an assumption when you call it a dusty, dry fable. You don't have anything to back that up. And I didn't do that, Grace. I don't know that I'd call myself a Bible scholar. I know the Bible fairly well, and I debate atheists all the time. To be a scholar, you actually have to have a PhD, technically. I do have a master's, and I've studied the Bible over 20 years on top of my master's. So I don't know. Am I a scholar? Well, I know the Bible a little better than Grace, I'll say that. Because I didn't do that, Grace, when you threw out your objections to certain passages and the way I was using them. I answered your Bible objections last week. You heard that response. You said nothing to my response. You said nothing at all about my answer. You just continued with your colorful boasts and put-downs. And then Grace continues. She says, you're flaccid and feeble. Christ dangling from crossed sticks loses relevance daily. Ouch! Grace, do you really have to be so graphic? I mean, I don't care. I don't get offended too easily, but somebody out there might have found it offensive. Grace, boy, the cross loses relevance, huh? I'll tell you what. The day human beings stop sinning, the day human beings discontinue their selfish nature, which caused all the war and crime and bloodshed and real racism, on that day, the cross and its forgiveness will lose its relevance. That includes, Grace, the sin of arrogance and the sin of rudeness. But, Grace, I have my own sins. I do. We all do. Thus, the relevance of the cross. Then Grace continues. She says, church numbers are way down. Absolutely untrue, Grace. Church numbers in liberal mainline denominations are way down. Evangelical churches that stress a born-again experience are way up, Grace. Then Grace says, the youth are now pro-gay. The tide has turned and shall not turn back. Well, Grace, and I always give credit where credit is due, Grace, on that one, you are absolutely right. It's sad. It's ironic. But between the media, the college campuses, and the public schools, our youth are holding on to the popular trends, including the politically correct view of homosexuality and same-sex marriage. However, Grace, as a self-professed thinking atheist, you should know better than to try an argument like that. Grace, is truth determined by what the majority believe? The majority in our country believes in some kind of God. I myself would never use that as an argument that God exists, because most people believe in God. Would you use that as an argument that God exists, Grace? And Grace, there was a time in our history when the majority believed in slavery. So your statement that the youth today are accepting same-sex lifestyles as norm says zero, zip, about whether or not such an appraisal is right or accurate. And then she throws in something about John Adams, trying to prove that a lot of our founding fathers didn't believe this was a Christian country, as if that has anything to do with anything. But anyway, she says, as President John Adams said, the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. Grace, how many things do you want to argue about at one time? Whether or not our country is founded upon Christianity has nothing to do with Christianity being true. But since you brought it up, Grace, you are quoting Adams as you quote the Bible out of context. That quote is from the Treaty of Tripoli, 1797, which was passed under John Adams. Those words were found in there. But it was written before Adams actually took office. He approved, and he probably would not have disagreed with those words, but he himself did not write those words. The treaty was a work in progress, arrived in Washington shortly after Adams took office. Even so, when discussing the kind of government we are, under a government that does not mandate Christianity, Adams will say that we're not founded on Christianity. But when discussing the principles that inspired the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Revolutionary War, Adams said stuff quite differently. And I'm quoting here from a letter that Adams wrote Thomas Jefferson. The general principles on which the founders achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity. I will avow that I then believed and now believe that those general principles of Christianity are as eternal and immutable as the existence and attributes of God, and that those principles of liberty are as unalterable as human nature. Well, Grace, I hope you'll write again. I hope you'll take me up on my offer to debate, but actually I sent that offer to her by email over a week ago. I don't think we're going to hear any more from Grace, but I hope I'm wrong, because I would be delighted if we did. Last week I began a discussion, we'll continue it this week, about alleged Bible contradictions. Somebody like Grace would probably love a discussion like this, because she'd want to claim that the Bible does contradict. And one of the reasons people say that the Bible contradicts is, for example, they look at the Gospels, and we have four different Gospel accounts. Those accounts, at least it looks on first appearance, like they do not agree with each other in places, on minor events. For example, here it says there was one angel at Jesus' tomb. There it says there were two angels. Okay, well, first of all, I mentioned this last week. If the accounts meshed together perfectly, then people would say, well, these aren't four different eyewitness accounts. This is one eyewitness account. One man wrote this, and he wrote four different names, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Okay, so that's what people would say. So in a way, you can't win with people. Actually, the fact that the accounts are different is very good news historically, because it means from the onset that we're looking at different testimonies about Jesus. But people report things differently all the time. Just stand on the corner when people are giving their version, or go into a courtroom when people are giving their version of a car accident where they watched it from different points of view. In fact, some of you have probably been through this. You have some friends. Hey, did you hear that Bill and Sue were in a car accident? No, I didn't. Are they okay? Yeah, they're okay. They're okay, but somebody sideswiped them. But they're all right. Later on in the day, you hear, hey, did you hear that Bill and Sue and Fred were in a car accident? Whoa, whoa, whoa. I heard about Bill and Sue. You're telling me Fred was in the car? That piece of information had not been supplied before. Now, was that a contradiction? No, it's just that sometimes people get varying bits of information. Now, another thing is understanding the relationship between the Old and the New Covenant is very important. A lot of times people look at the Old Testament and go, oh, the Old Testament says eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. New Testament says turn the other cheek. Okay, if the word testament means covenant or agreement. So we have the old agreement between God and man. We have the new agreement between God and man. If God had said in the days of the Old Testament, this is my testimony and it's never going to change and there will never be any new covenant or new agreement, then that would be problematic. But not only does the Bible not say that, the New Testament is predicted in the old. The old goes out of its way to predict the New Testament. Jeremiah 31. Chapter 31, verse 31, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their forefathers. I will write my law within them. I will put it upon their hearts. Things are going to change under the new covenant. The old law had, you could almost break it down into two parts, the moral law, the ritual law. Now, Jesus came along and he said, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. Well, the moral law was fulfilled through the coming of the Holy Spirit. If the Spirit of God lives in our heart, we shouldn't have to go to our refrigerator and read tacked up on the refrigerator with a magnet, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. If the love of God comes upon us and amplifies our conscience, we should just naturally treat people in an unselfish way. And if you're being unselfish, then you don't have to be told that you shouldn't sleep with your neighbor's wife or steal your neighbor's goods or kill your neighbor. Now, there was also a ritual law, all kinds of animal sacrifices. This answers the question that people always ask. If Jesus died for everybody and Jesus is the way of salvation, well, then how did God forgive people who lived before Jesus? Well, at least part of that answer is given here. People that lived before Jesus were given a picture of what Jesus was to do. The ancient Israelites understood that without a blood atonement, their sins could not be forgiven. Now, the blood of those animals wasn't really atoning for them. It was a picture of Jesus on the cross before Jesus came to the cross. So understanding the relationship between the Old and the New Covenant is very important. But there are all kinds of other things to say about Bible contradiction, and we will say them next time. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.